Hey everyone, welcome to the Front Stretch Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Albino. Now as always, I'll be joined by my colleague Mike Neff as we'll break down a great weekend of racing in Chicago. Alex Bowman won his first cup race in an awesome late race battle with Kyle Larson. Neff and I will both give our take on how much Bowman's improved over the past couple of years, but even this year, after not getting a top 10 in the opening 8 races of the year, only to follow that up with finishing no worse than 15th in the past 9. We'll also discuss the Truck and Xfinity Series races, which saw a confrontation between Grant Enfinger and Austin Hill in the Truck race. Josh Williams then calls into the show to discuss his season with DGM Racing. Josh believes he can win this weekend at Daytona as long as the race doesn't go like February when it was single file around the top the entire day, which Josh found to be very aggravating. But before we get started, make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the Front Stretch Podcast, as those ratings help us out tremendously. Now let's talk Chicago with Neff. All right, Neff, I think we're in agreement here. Great race this past weekend at Chicago. Alex Bowman gets his first victory. I don't know if you guys saw on Twitter, but I kind of predicted that. You're welcome, Alex Bowman. But anyway, Neff, really good racing. You know, you had Alex Bowman, who he was solid all race, but then late, Kyle Larson closed a 3-second gap in lap traffic, of course, but got around the 88, only two laps later for the 88 to get back by the 42. That was just good, hard racing, really, and that's the second year in a row at Chicago.
Yeah, Chicago has kind of stepped up the game as far as putting on good races. Now, if we just get some people to show up to watch the races, it'd be great. I mean, I understand the whole rain delay thing, which we could get into that, too, later on, because that was a debacle. But the race itself, I thought, was fantastic. And I really give Alex credit. I think Alex has really gotten a reputation or gotten known as just kind of taking what's given, you know, or what he could get and not really going for it. And he had that lead and got, you know, didn't do well getting through lap traffic. I'm sure he would tell you that himself. But once Larson got to him, he got up on the wheel and took it back. And this could very well be one of those career-defining moments where not only is it his first win, but it changed the way he attacks the races. And we'll see going forward, but I really think we're going to see a different Alex Bowman on a racetrack after this weekend.
I agree with you. I think there's going to be a lot of confidence built. Obviously, you know, we see a driver get their first win and we expect them to win more times, you know, pretty quickly. And we really haven't seen that from the younger core of drivers, other than you could say maybe Chase, who went on a tear towards the end of last year and then won again earlier this year. But for Bowman, I mean, you look at his career, and he probably shouldn't even be here, honestly. Like, but it's a story of never giving up. 2013, he wins two poles for REB Racing in the Xfinity Series. Then gets moved up to the Cup Series in 2014 to BK Racing. So you're talking, you know, BK Racing is not even around anymore. But they were 30th on back. I mean, his average finish was 32.6. 2015 comes around. 31.6 is average finish and runs 35 of 36 races for Tommy Baldwin Racing. Then I remember where I was when he got dropped from
when
Tommy
he
Baldwin.
Found out on Twitter, yeah, that he'd been fired.
I was in the Charlotte airport getting ready to come home from the media tour. And that was in 2016. And that really, I mean, that was a downward spiral for him. But he did, you know, he made the most of that opportunity because then that allowed him to go elsewhere. And elsewhere was Junior Motorsports for 9 races. And then he filled in for Dale Jr. when Dale Jr. had the concussions.
Yeah, not only the 9 races, but also became the, for lack of a word, the sim driver for Hendrick.
Right, yeah.
And he was spending tons of time in a simulator, which certainly kept him up to speed, even if he wasn't racing in the Cup Series.
So what looked to be, you know, one of the worst things that could happen, you get knocked out of your ride, you find out on Twitter, ultimately becomes a blessing because you go to Hendrick Motorsports, who at the time was, you know, Jimmy Johnson won the championship that year in 2016, ran 10 races in the 88, had 3 top 10s. 2017...
He should have won at Phoenix.
He should have won at Phoenix, led 194 laps, I believe. 2017, ran 3 NASCAR races total and won one of them in the Xfinity Series for Chip Ganassi Racing at Charlotte. Last year, obviously, takes over the 88 full-time, gets three top fives, 11 top tens, makes the playoffs, advances to the second round, but finished 16th in points, ultimately. And then Neff, this year, I mean, we talked about this like two and a half months ago, before Easter. The 88 team was out to lunch. They didn't have a top 10 until Talladega, where they finished second. Then they backed that up with second at Dover, and then a second at Kansas. And, you know, since that first race back at Talladega, they haven't finished outside the top 15, and that's now eight consecutive races. So, I mean, I don't want to say he's peaking too early, but obviously it's good to get your first win, and they've definitely turned the corner at Hendrick because all of the cars ran well this weekend.
Absolutely, and we didn't mention it last week, but I was thinking about it this week, looking at statistics during the race and what have you. Thanks to Martin Truex winning at Sonoma, we now are guaranteed that all race winners in the regular season will be in the playoffs because we've only got nine races left and there are seven winners. So we're guaranteed that we'll, at the most, have 16 winners. But, I mean, I give Alex a lot of credit on multiple fronts. He had a bit of a reputation in the garage area for, I don't know the proper word for it, but not being supportive of his team, let's just say. Tended to badmouth BK's equipment a little more than he probably should. And when he worked for Tommy Baldwin, you know, Tommy felt like Alex didn't have the drive or the passion that he should have. And in the end, that's kind of why I think he lost his job and lost it in the fashion that he did. Because I think Tommy felt like that was all he deserved. And whether that's right or wrong, that was the perception. And I think that was a real wake-up to Alex when he lost his job that way and had to really scramble to stay in the sport. But I give him credit that not only did he scramble to stay in the sport, but he maximized his opportunities once he got them again. And yes, they've been a little out to lunch on the 88 early this year, but as Hendrick has had this resurgence over the last month or so, I feel like he's been closer to the front of that than at the rear of it. And we all knew that the time would come that he would win a race. And I was honestly, and I think I tweeted this, I was honestly glad to see it be a race where he went and got it. It yeah. wasn't a fuel mileage deal. It wasn't rain shortened. It wasn't two tires versus four. He got out there, was leading, got past, drove back up and took the win and drove away from him. And I thought that, to me, I thought that was a more telling thing than getting your first win in some other fashion, which we've seen. I mean, even Joey Logano's first win, I believe, was on a fuel mileage deal. And you get some of these other guys that are good drivers are going forward, have won a lot of races, but that first win, they kind of manufactured it. And this one, Alex went out and took it. And I give him a lot of credit. I love that he took us along for the ride afterwards. And you got to see him sending out tweets as the sun was coming up with all his friends. That was just cool. And then going on NBC hungover and hurting. I mean, it made it real, and it made you appreciate him more as a person.
Yeah, for sure. Alex has got I've gotten to know him a little bit over the past couple of years. He's got a cool personality, kind of laid back, but can get fiery. But it was definitely cool to see him win. And like you said, the way he did it. Last year, had that happened, had he been leading late, Larson got by, I don't think Bowman gets back by. Because you had to regroup. Because ultimately, you know, Larson, yes, you were in lap traffic, but you lost over 3 seconds in a very, very short amount of time.
Yeah.
And he had to regroup and then get back by, use the side drive down the backstretch, made a little bit of contact, and ultimately got by for the win. And you've definitely seen a more mature Alex Bowman this year, even compared to last year. And, you know, like I said, we're almost halfway through the year now. I don't want to say they're peaking, but who knows? I mean, William Byron had a great race this past week, right? We're going to talk about him in a little bit. Jimmy Johnson, his best finish in a year and a half, which is unbelievable to think. So Hendrick's turned the corner. It'll just be interesting to see if they can continue it going forward.
Yeah, we're gonna find out. I mean, we all knew that everybody was gonna have to learn these packages, and somebody would hit on it earlier than others. Stuart Haas is the same way. They're starting to pick up the pace a little bit as well. It's just a matter of once you figure it out, do you continue to gain and pull ahead, or do you stay with the other guys? But whatever it is, I think we're poised to have three Hendrick drivers, or if not four, in the playoffs, and three or four Gibbs guys in the playoffs, and both Penske guys in the playoffs. So it's your haves are definitely going to be there. We'll see if any have-nots can make it up there in the next seven races.
Yeah, you'd have to add another Penske because there's three Penskes. So
true.
Yeah.
Sorry, Ryan Blaney.
And then you're going to have Kyle Larson in the playoffs more than likely because he's starting to turn the corner. Also since Dover. I mean, Dover was kind of it's been 2 months now, but it was kind of a key turning point for a lot of these teams. And granted, for Larson, the second place finish this past week was just his second top five, along with Dover, where he finished third. But Neff, I feel for him a little bit. This is his eighth second place finish since his last victory, which was almost 2 years ago now at Richmond. And I mean, he's got speed. He hasn't ever won in a mile and a half, which is kind of crazy to think. He's got a ton of second place finishes, in second at Chicago for this second straight year.
Yeah, he had an interesting weekend.
Yeah,
we were talking about it before the podcast about. He was running dirt on Saturday night and got disqualified in the wing sprint car race because a crew member stepped outside of the work area box under a red flag, whatever that really constitutes. So he was PO'd and went into midget race and just stomped him. And then came out and you thought it looked like he was going to pull it off again this time, but didn't. Last year, obviously, the storied finish with Kyle. I mean, he's right there knocking on the door again. I honestly think having Kurt there has been a good thing because it seemed like early in the year Kurt was carrying the flag. And I think that has pushed Kyle a little bit and gotten him up on the wheel maybe a little bit more than he was when he was kind of the flag bearer at Ganassi. So, the talent he's got, I'm with you. I'm amazed he's never won at a mile and a half track, especially considering how almost all of his other wins have been on 2 mile tracks.
Yeah.
That you would think it would be a very similar mindset and a similar technique, but it'll come. I mean, he's been around the sport for a long time, and if he doesn't get to 40 wins by the time he quits, I would be very surprised.
I mean, it's interesting though, because this is his sixth full-time year and he's only got 5 wins. Now, granted, I mean, is that the same amount as Chase? No, it's one. Chase has one less. But, like, we've talked about this a lot. The young guys, yes, they're fast, but they're not really winning. But when you see guys like Bowman, Larson, even Chase, you know, Byron, who we're going to talk about here in a little bit, now starting to compete for wins, Eric Jones. I mean, there's a ton of them. Blaney. The future of NASCAR is bright. We just need to start getting these young drivers in victory lane. Now, if you can comment on that, or we can talk about Jimmy Johnson, because the 48 team, I would say it was kind of surprising this weekend.
I mean, in context of the year, yes, but they seemed to have speed all weekend. And I thought it was pretty cool at the beginning of the race when Jimmy ends up on the outside right at the start because Harvick had a bad initial start and he and Dylan really mixed it up. It was kind of fun to watch as it was almost old Jimmy. You know, you hate to categorize it that way, but he even talked about it himself on Twitter that it was great being up front and being in the mix. And, you know, it may be that as Hendrick has turned, he's turning too, and they're going to figure this thing out. I think I've talked about it on here before that the advantage that he and Chad had was their ability to maintain the car platform down on the ground with the old package that used to have ride height rules. And once the ride height went away, and everybody was down on the ground all the time, that kind of took that ability away from them. And the two of them together never really seemed to figure it out after that. So it may be that he's finally getting the feel of running these things without having that dropping down and having them onto the earth the whole time. But it also may just be that the whole package at Hendrick has just gotten better. But whatever it is, I think that this weekend proved, contrary to belief by a couple people in the world, Jimmy Johnson has not forgotten how to drive a race car. I love how people think that a guy can win a championship and 2 years later just be completely clueless on how to drive a race car. So I find that interesting. But he's definitely got a little pep in the step. And again, in this format, he has proven to be the best that ever was. And I would not be surprised if Hendrick continues to ramp up that we would not see him when we get to the playoffs make a serious run at championship number eight.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to say this has 2016 written all over it, where Hendrick struggled for a big part of the year, and specifically Jimmy, and then Jimmy comes out of the playoffs and wins, what, four of the races and the championship. Yeah. Now, could that happen? Yes, anything can happen. Do I think it'll happen? Probably not, but only because we've seen Chevrolet struggle for so long since going to the Camaro. But then I'm kind of a hypocrite for saying that, because then this past weekend, they have three of the top five, and really, you know, with this package, and it's led to some mixed racing. A lot of people like it. A lot of people don't like it. But this weekend, we had a lot of passing for the lead, and specifically Chevrolet. I mean, you saw all the Hendrick cars. You had Jimmy, who went up and passed for the lead. You had William Byron go up and pass Kevin Harvick for the lead at one point. Alex Bowman obviously passed for the lead. So they're starting to lead more laps. Jimmy led 10, which, you know, over the past 2 years, he's led, I think, less than 100 laps combined. Well, the last year and a half. And this is probably the best race he's had from start to finish in probably 2 years. Now, you could throw the Roval in there, too, but obviously the finish didn't go as planned.
Yeah, true statement there. But yeah, I agree. We're not telling people anything they don't know, that it has been a struggle. And one good race does not, you know, a recovery make, but if they can continue this upward trajectory, and again, as with any driver, start knocking off a bunch of top fives, the wins will come. And it, you know, you see these fairy tale deals all the time. It wouldn't surprise me to see Jimmy win Indy to make the playoffs and then turn around and make a run to the championship. So we'll see. Oh, one point I did want to give to you real quick. You were talking about how Larson had so many years in already. Martin Truex had one win in his first 7 years in the Cup Series.
That's true, yep.
So it may be later that he gets on that run, but he, in reality, only had three wins in his first 10. But he's won quite a few of them in the last couple.
Oh, yeah, for sure. As we talked about last week, the rivalry between him and Kyle, which both drivers didn't really have good weekends in Chicago. But now someone who did, I thought, and I don't know if I was surprised by this or not, because William Byron's been fast for, I don't know, really all year, especially in qualifying with seven front row starts. But then he can't put the full race together with Chad. Even last week at Sonoma, they led every lap in the first stage, got the first stage victory. But this week I was, you know, pretty impressed because he came from the back. They changed an engine, I believe, and then had to start at the rear. And then, you know, sure, there was the weather delay, which we'll get into momentarily. But then very soon after, he was in the top 10 and top 5, and he had one of the fastest cars. And like I said, drove up there and took the lead from Harvick, who led the most laps. What's your thoughts on William? Because, spoiler alert, I think he's going to be pretty good at Daytona this weekend.
I've been on the Byron bandwagon since he's come into the National Touring Series. I've told the story before that Daniel Hemric is the greatest Legends car driver I've ever seen. And in one of the summers when Daniel dominated the summer shootout, he only lost two races that he was running at the finish. And both of those, he was beaten convincingly by William Byron. And at that point, I'm like, this kid's got some talent. And I watched him as he worked his way up through the ranks. And he's, I think that his greatest asset is his demeanor, similar to Alex Bowman. You know, I mean, I was surprised at how many people gave Alex grief about how subdued he was when he took the checkered flag. But that's just his demeanor. And William Byron's the same way. He's extremely calm in the car. He's very analytical in the car. And he lays out for his crew chief what he wants, what he's feeling, and what he thinks they need to do. But then he takes whatever he's given and runs it. And I feel like the longer he's in these things, and it's, you know, it's a learning process for anybody that's new to these, but the more and more that he's in it and starts to really understand what this car needs to feel like over the long haul, he's getting better, and he's going to end up putting races together. It's, you hear from so many of these drivers that the move from anything to trucks is minimal because you're still running similar distance races. And then when you go from trucks to Xfinity, they're a little longer, but it's still not that big of a jump in distance. And then when you go from Xfinity to Cup, it's a huge transition because you suddenly are going twice as far most weekends. You're making 2 to 3 times as many pit stops because you have so many tires. And it just, there's so many more variables involved, and it's so much harder to grasp everything you've got to do to have a winning car at the end of a race. And he's an extremely bright young man, and I think he is figuring this out. And it's probably not going to be long before they put 2 or 3 wins together.
Yeah, I think he's going to be one of the, I guess, the rare cases of drivers who are young that once they win one, I do think there's going to be an outbreak of 2 or 3 or even more, because he's so young and so new to stock cars, really. He's only been racing for 7 years. And look how quick he's advanced. I mean, yeah. He was a rookie last year in Cup, obviously. The year before that, he was a rookie in Xfinity, won the championship. The year before that, a rookie in trucks, should have won the championship and won 7 races, which was a career high or a series high in the truck series for a rookie ever. So, the future of William Byron is pretty bright, if I had to say so myself. Neff, we got a few more topics to talk about in the Cup Series. I want to pair this one together, though, because Stewart Haas Racing had a pretty eventful day at Chicago. You had Kevin Harvick, who really dominated the event. It was the same car he ran at Chicago or at Kansas, a similar track to Chicago. Led 132 laps, so roughly half of the race. Got in the wall late. Did you think there should have been a caution when he got in the wall?
Hell no.
I don't either. However, I was listening to the Door Bumper Clear podcast Monday night, and they did, only because it looked like he got in the wall, got off the wall, and then got back into the wall. So, you know, maybe something was wrong. You never know. You know, driver safety is always first. But I also don't think there should have been a caution.
If there was no caution when Kyle got in the wall, there shouldn't have been a caution when Kevin got in the wall.
Yeah.
Because it was the same thing.
I think Harvick's was a little more. He made a little more, like, he rode it longer. But not much.
They still both rode it.
Yeah.
It wasn't like they bounced into it and bounced off. Both of them rode down the wall for a while. And we saw the same thing in the Xfinity race. If you watch the Xfinity race, there were guys early in the race that got into the wall, rode down the wall, and they did not throw a caution. And then late in the race, when, hey, it could be beneficial if we get a caution right about now, somebody rides into the wall and they throw the caution. And I give credit where credit's due. We have seen a dramatic reduction in BS caution flags over the last few years with the advent of stage racing or not. Whatever it is, we've had a lot fewer bogus cautions, and I'm thankful for that. But we're still seeing those occasions late in races where if the opportunity presents itself, we're throwing a caution, just a bunch of things up and add some excitement. And again, entertainment, I get it, but I also am of the opinion if it's a caution on lap 10, it's a caution on lap 190. If it's not on lap 10, then it shouldn't be on 190.
Granted, I mean, this caution was almost with 100 laps to go. It was the last caution of the race. I don't think it should have been a caution either.
The other thing you've got is Kyle was running, what, 15th, 17th, and Kevin was running top five.
Yeah, he was running top, I think, fourth.
Yeah, so they, I look at that too, that they're looking at a guy that's in contention for the win. If we throw the caution, we give him a chance to work on the car and not go down a lap. But again, in the naive integrity of the sport way that I look at things, you can't do that. It's got to either be one way or the other for both instances.
For sure. Now,
can I throw one other caution question at you?
Go for it.
Where the hell was the competition caution after the freaking monsoon?
Yeah, so let's get into that weather delay right now.
Because that really fired me up when we get to the end of stage one and we blow about six tires. And I'm like, if we'd had a competition caution, in theory, they'd have come in and checked on our tire wear and we wouldn't have blown all these tires. But for some reason, i.e., we don't care about the viewership this late in the game because we've already gone through the rain delay and we've lost everybody we're going to lose, so we're not going to throw a competition caution. And that, I had a real, real problem with that one, because we will throw a competition caution anytime there's a light mist on a normal race weekend the night before. And that was a typhoon that came through there on Sunday, and they did not throw a competition caution, and it ended up biting about six teams.
Yeah, no, you're dead on with that. I can't really say it much better than you did, but I'll add that, yes, it seems like any time, even sometimes there isn't rain or precipitation or any sort of mist.
Yeah, it's like heavy dew.
Yeah, it can be anything, and it seems like more times than not there's a competition caution, and yet this week, I mean, NASCAR shouldn't even have started the race to begin with.
Well, yeah,
and
we want to go down that road too.
So I felt
bad for O'Donnell because he put his foot in his mouth, because there was a tweet that came out on Friday from NASCAR that says, we look for lightning within a 10-mile radius, and if we don't see it, we'll start the race. And then on Sunday, after they had started the race and people started bitching about why did we start the race, O'Donnell comes out and says, we cleared it to 8 miles. So somewhere between Friday and Sunday, there was some executive decision to shorten that radius by 2 miles and go ahead and start the race.
And if you listen to the radio, like I heard, Martin Truex said he saw lightning under the pace laps. So, I mean, that's very dangerous. Obviously, we don't want what happened at Pocono a few years ago. So, you know, if you mess with electricity, it's always going to win. The race should have never have started. We knew this weather was coming. All the radar saw it. You know, NASCAR, the people that study the weather around the tracks, they were putting up the radar, and it was terrible. They should have never have thrown the green flag. And we only got 10 green flag laps in, which essentially is about 4.5 to 5 minutes. And granted, those were really good racing laps. It was incredible racing. But it should have never have started. I think, you know, it would have been tough to say if we would have had a different race should it not have rained and should, you know, they ran in the heat. But if the indication of the first 10 laps was going to be for the rest of the race, I think it still would have been a good race. But that's besides the point, because Neff, it literally looked like a monsoon on TV. Yeah, I mean, you had the Peacock absolutely. Pit box torn apart. Bubba Wallace's car cover flown off. Chicago's called the Windy City, but that was new level of wind.
Yeah, there was a hospitality tent in one of the hospitality areas got destroyed. A bunch of the pit boxes got wrecked. Pop-ups blew all over the place. It was Armageddon. And again, you see that and you're like, people were scrambling to get anywhere in safety right before that hit. where if they had not started the race, the people could have been well buttoned down, and we might not have had quite the carnage that we had. So it's, I mean, it's a tough call. I understand NASCAR is in a tough spot. They've had situations like that before where they started a race and the weather broke up and it didn't happen. But I just feel like it was too close with too much lightning for them to even take that chance. And then they end up double talking about it. And yeah, that was, again, I don't know why we started, and I certainly don't know why we didn't have a competition caution.
Now, I will say I'm glad that NASCAR didn't throw the plug on the whole day, because you saw that the storm was going to be pretty big, and it lasted like an hour and a half or so. And Chicago does have lights, which obviously helps. Yep. But I'm glad that, like Fontana a few years ago, it was like 3:30 Eastern time or 4 Eastern time, and the race was halfway, and they called it, and Fontana has lights, and then the rain stopped, and it's like
it stopped like 5 minutes after they called it, and the sun came out, and it was dry within like an hour and a half.
Right.
Without them doing track riding.
So I'm glad that didn't happen, because that would have postponed the race to Monday, and no one wants that. So, you know, we got a good race out of it, but yeah, I don't think NASCAR should have ever thrown it. They kind of bit their tongue, or, you know, caught with their foot in their mouth, whatever, you know, whatever one is saying you want to say. But ultimately, I mean, that was some dangerous shit. It really was.
Absolutely.
And also, when we know there's a weather delay coming, why don't we put these cars in the garage?
I think that's in an effort to keep people from doing nefarious things to their cars. That you can try to button it all down, but there's always that possibility that somebody will come in and make adjustments to a car when you're technically not supposed to.
Yeah.
I think that's what they do it.
I mean, I would imagine so, but...
Hey, I mean, I agree. If it's just going to be a light rain, I understand it, but when you can tell there's purple in the radar, you need to get them... I agree. I would like to see them put them in the garage, lock all the doors, and post armed guards, and just tell them that if anybody touches anything, they're out of NASCAR forever. So that doesn't happen. But I'm with you, because luckily we didn't see it this weekend, but sometimes you have that happen, and then people will have electrical issues because it gets wet up inside the car, and water and electricity don't do well together.
Not at all. Yeah, I mean, we've seen that in the past, where like the ECU shuts down, you can't get the car started, blah, 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 and it's a mess. So when you see, yeah, like you said, when you see those types of colors on the radar, you should probably put them in the garage. But hey, we don't get paid the big bucks to make those decisions. Just a suggestion. Now, Neff, another NASCAR decision I want to talk to you about, and you were fired up about this one. I know you were with me personally via text, and I think you put some stuff on Twitter as well. Denny Hamlin kind of blasted NASCAR on a pit call, on a, you know, an uncontrolled tire violation that NASCAR deemed was worthy, although you don't think so, nor do I, because ultimately, you know, we had, it was the right rear, I believe, right?
As near as I can tell, and that's, yeah.
So
that's where I'm coming from too, where I believe the penalty was called on the right rear tire that was sitting roughly 3.5 feet from the rear tire, from the tire carrier who was making an adjustment on the car.
Yeah, so he's making an adjustment on the car, and then if anything, and I said this to you, and I thought the penalty would have been for, you know, putting the tire over the line when, you know, moving when the other tire carrier is rolling it to the team members. But we've seen that in the past, and it hasn't been called a penalty. So that's where I thought the penalty was originally, uncontrolled, because he kind of rolled it, lost control. But ultimately it was for it being, I don't even think it was 3 feet. I mean, it was, to me, from the tweet that I saw, it wasn't even a foot in my opinion, but who knows? We, you know, not a straight on camera angle, but what, you know, these uncontrolled tire penalties have really screwed up a lot of drivers' days. Some of them are worthy. Some of them are definitely uncontrolled, but then a lot of them are not enough in. Yeah, I feel like we're at a boiling point where something's got to give.
I agree. I think it's time for an RTA meeting and to take those concerns to NASCAR and say, look, the intent of uncontrolled tire is to keep tires from rolling out into the pit lane and having cars hit them. Because if a car hits one of those tires and they take off flying and bouncing, they weigh 75 pounds. They can't put a hurt on somebody. And I understand the safety aspect of that. But we're to the point where we're making these calls like the one on Sunday where the tire is perfectly still. It is not moving. And if it's more than an arm length, it's inches more than an arm length from that tire carrier. And it ruined Denny Hamlin's day, as he said. And there were other guys that had their days ruined as well. And it was similar to the calls early this year when the guys were at the wall waiting to catch tires and they leaned forward and put their hand down in the box and got penalized for too many guys over the wall. And it just the intention of too many guys over the wall is having too many guys over there working on the car.
Servicing the car.
You know? And we saw, I mean, what was the one that killed Kenseth in the championship?
Yeah.
Where his guy was just standing there.
Yep.
He wasn't doing anything. He's just standing there, and they get him for too many men over the wall, which, okay, there's too many men in the box, but the dude physically was 5 feet from the car with his hands in his pockets. There has to be some common sense thrown into these rules. And to hear NASCAR say that they don't catch all of them still, which I find interesting because we have this whole system where it's supposed to be automatically flagged by sensors and the videos and whatever. But if we're not catching all of them, then the ones that we do catch should, I don't want to say be egregious, but they should at least be an obvious safety concern. And right now, so many of these uncontrolled tires, the tires are not even moving. They're literally, if they fell over, they would land on a pit crew member. And I just, you're messing with the outcomes of these races over something that is just truly trivial.
Yeah, you said it perfect there. I mean, here's an idea, and it probably won't go anywhere, but uncontrolled, right? So uncontrolled, you have to have possession of the tires or within arm's reach or whatever, right? Well, this tire was definitely an arm's reach away, but safety is always first, because like you said, these tires are 75, 80 pounds filled with air. If one gets airborne, I mean, not only could it hurt someone, it could kill someone.
Yeah. I've seen one, God, it was years ago. Somebody hit one on pit lane, it went up, and they had one of the covers on the pit box thing, and it landed on top of that cover and just destroyed the whole top of the pit box.
So definitely dangerous, but if it's in your working area, if it's in the pit box, if it's not outside the pit box, I don't feel like that should be a penalty. If I might have said that wrong. If it's inside the pit box, no penalty. If it's because ultimately it's not uncontrolled. Like, yes, they might not have possession of it, but it's not.
It's in your pit box.
It's in your pit box, right? And we don't work on cars outside of the pit box, or it's a penalty. So I feel like if a tire's, it might be uncontrolled by NASCAR terms, but if it's in the pit box, I feel like that should be fair game. Because ultimately, if another driver hits it, it's on them. Because they're in the other pit box. They're in the other driver's pit box. So,
yeah.
I don't know. But what do you think about Hamlin's comments? Because, you know, NASCAR put out the tweet of, it's a GIF of the tire being uncontrolled. And he said, ruined our day. And for what? A nickel and dime judgment call. This intent is not why the rule was put into place. Let's go back to using common sense. And then, Neff, yeah. I'll let you comment on that.
NASCAR says you can't judge intent.
Yeah, so on one of the SiriusXM shows yesterday, Steve O'Donnell comes on and says, you can't judge intent. And so Hamlin follows that up and says, that's true. However, a tire sitting in place right next to a changer is not uncontrolled. If it's a real safety issue, then let's go back to the 40 guys we laid off who used to carry these tires in a controlled manner. So blunt Hamlin there, which is
valid.
Totally agree. And I agree. Like if you want less uncontrolled tire penalties, then let's bring back that extra guy, which would now be what, six guys? And there used to be seven for the catch count.
Yep.
So, I mean, valid points by Hamlin, but what's your take on that?
I'm completely with him. We and somebody else sent out a tweet about the fact that we got rid of that extra guy to save the team's money, and then we came up with three different aero packages, so they're having to build extra cars, and any one of those cars would pay for all 40 guys that got laid off. So the cost savings isn't worth it. But I agree. I feel like you have put these teams in this situation because you took a tire carrier away, and now you keep penalizing them because they don't have that tire carrier and they're trying to do so much during the stops. So we either need to loosen up the rules a little bit on letting the gas van do more than just gas, or allowing another guy over the wall to make adjustments to the car or something. Because right now you put these teams in a box where we all know that fractions of a second are huge in this sport, so they have to try to get everything done that they can with as few people as they have. But if you're going to be calling these penalties that are simply not worthy of being a penalty, exactly, then I think we're damaging the integrity of the sport for the wrong reasons.
Totally agree. I'd be frustrated as hell if I was anyone on the 11 team. Specifically the driver, because he had one of the fastest cars. He won stage one. Granted, like we said, that was a whole debacle with four tires going flat on the last two laps. But, hey, they made a good strategy call and got the stage win by taking, I think, just two tires late. He said in practice, too, or pre-race, he said that he felt like he had one of the best cars. And for that to get taken away from you for, I'll say it was a BS call. I mean, that was not worthy of a penalty, in my opinion, your opinion, a lot of people's opinions, definitely not Hamlin's opinion. So, I don't know. There'll be something to watch going forward. Judging intent, I guess, will be something to watch. But, Neff, final thoughts on the Cup race?
Just want to see more people in Chicago come out to watch the races. I mean, you're talking about the second or third largest city in the country, and we're not filling the stands halfway for what has been one of the best races of the year the last 2 years. And I know early on it didn't put on the greatest races, but of late it has been fantastic because of the aging surface. And they're missing a great opportunity, and if they don't support it, they'll take it away.
Yeah, unfortunately. And, you know, we say we want less mile and a halves, but we want mile and a halves that have aging asphalt, and Chicago has just that. And they talk a lot about the bumps. Dale Jr. specifically noted, you know, it's kind of like driving off a set of stairs into turn one, which I can only imagine how that feels. But
yeah, 200 miles an hour.
Yeah, but we want Chicago. We need Chicago. Chicago's a good track. So it might not have put on the best Xfinity and truck racing this weekend, but it has in the past now. So let's go into that. Let's start with Xfinity because Cole Custer dominated. We've talked about this a lot on the podcast. He's ready for Cup, and we think they've done it. I mean, I think you'd agree with that, right?
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah, so we're both in agreement on that. If I was Clint Bowyer, Daniel Suarez, or Eric Almirola, I'd be a little worried right now. And I would honestly say specifically Bowyer, because Custer's coming. He's going to run for Stuart Haas, and I'd imagine next year at the Cup level, because this is his fourth win of the year. Prior to this year, he only had two victories total. Him and Mike Shipley, I mean, they're a dangerous duo.
Yeah, they are hitting on all eight right now and are definitely in the mix for this thing for the championship by the end of the year. I think he's going to give Christopher Bell all he can take. There's a couple other guys that are at least in the mix. We know Ross Chastain isn't going to run for the championship in Xfinity, but
Reddick,
he's there. Reddick was white hot, has had a couple weird things happen to him over the last couple races that slowed him down a little, but he's going to be right in the mix. So and I honestly think Chase Briscoe is going to end up in there by the end of the year.
He's been consistent.
We'll see, But it's Custer is definitely one of the two or three favorites for the championship. And, I mean, you may end up seeing him have to spend another year down just because of contracts and what have you. But I'm with you. I think Boyer really needs to worry about having a ride because Suarez, I believe, has got sponsorship stuff in place to keep him in that car. And I don't know that Boyer does.
No. And they're both in contract years. I mean, Suarez was only a one-year deal.
Oh, was it? I thought he had 3 years
on. No, and then Boyer had signed a three-year deal when he first started, but this is the third year of that. So, I mean, Haas is going to support Custer. They have his whole career.
They're related.
Yeah, exactly. So they're going to, you know, they're going to support him. They're going to back him over Boyer, in my opinion. I mean, they sponsored him his whole career, really, until this year. And then he started, the 00 team finally started getting outside sponsorships. So, in terms of favorites, I mean, look, he's great at Homestead. He led 180 of 200 laps there in 2017 and the race, which was his first win. And then you look at this year, right? So I feel like the best races you can base Homestead off of are Chicago and also Fontana. And guess who won both those races?
There you go.
So, and he beat a cup drivers in both of them. He beat Kyle Busch heads up at Fontana, Joey Logano this weekend. So, I don't know. He's definitely ready. Just needs to find some room over there at Stuart Haas, and I think they will. Now, Neff.
Yeah, and Stuart Haas doesn't have any affiliates anymore, I don't think, that of any kind of real satellite teams that they could farm him to. You know, I mean, like, kind of like Ty Dillon in the 13.
Yeah.
That's basically another Childress team. But there's no real full-on satellites for Stuart Haas anymore, I don't believe.
No, I mean, last year, Custer ran three races at the cup level and had to run for Rick Ware. So I know they probably don't want to do that, run for a smaller team like that. Sure, they would bring in more money with sponsorship. I mean, he qualified in the top 12 there last year at Richmond, so... In a Rick Ware car, which I think that's probably the first time that's ever happened for that team. So he's definitely a wheelman. He's grown on me, I know personally, and he's way better with the media now. Back 5 years ago when he was first getting into the sport, even 2 years ago, wasn't the best interview. Wasn't really fun to talk to, but he's definitely grown. That old cold custard reviews is definitely, you know, kind of showing his personality, just like with a Bowman that we saw this weekend. But Neff, I do want to quickly talk about Christopher Bell, because I believe this is the, you know, he crossed the finish line third, but I believe this is the first time that NASCAR has disqualified a driver that hasn't won the race this year. So ultimately gets 1 point for starting the race and finishes 38th.
And gets a point. I honestly was surprised he even gave him a point. I thought they'd just take everything away. Not that it really matters, because he's got enough wins and he's going to be in a championship. I like it. Again, I think you should drive with legal cars and you should be tech at the track. I just am still dumbfounded how we spend so much time in tech all weekend and then have these guys fail post-race. I don't understand how that happens. And it's, if I was on these teams, I would be frustrated because I'm like, look, give us spin a wheel and pick two or three things that you tech before practice, before qualifying, before the race. And then after the race, tear us all the way down however you want to. I'm fine with that. But the fact that we spend 4 or 5 hours doing tech before the race and we've still got people failing after is just frustrating. And I don't know the parameters around why he failed or what they failed on, but – as much as we tech these cars, it's barring some just weird failure, I don't see how they don't pass tech post-race.
Yeah, I feel like, the ride height rules have gone away in Cup, and this is the second time it's happened now in the last 3 weeks between trucks, obviously with Ross Chastain, and now Xfinity with Christopher Bell. And it's been a ride height issue, so it was too low in the left front, just like Ross's was when he crossed the checkered flag first. In Iowa. So, I don't know. I'd like to see kind of the ride height issues go away. If it's going to be gone in one series, I feel like it should be gone in all. But maybe that's just a dumb idea.
It seems logical if it's the top series of the national series, why the other two wouldn't do the same thing. But again, I don't understand how you can fail it post-race without there being some sort of a part failure.
Right.
If you passed it beforehand. So
10-4. Neff, I want to talk quickly about the truck race because it wasn't the best race. There was only 10 cars on the lead lap, or 10 trucks on the lead lap. But it was interesting because post-race, and I know you didn't see this video at the time of recording, but you definitely heard about it because Austin Hill is making no friends, especially in the Thor Sport Racing Camp, as him and Grant Enfinger had a little post-race confrontation after the truck race, where essentially, you know, they were talking about a restart where ultimately, you know, Enfinger got crashed. But Enfinger, you know, it ended with Enfinger kind of touching Hill, and Hill's being like, don't touch me, I'll hurt you, blah, blah, blah. Austin Hill's making no friends, Neff.
No, but hey.
Country strong.
This sport ain't about making friends. This sport's about winning. And Austin Hill's got to win this year, and he's in a truck that he can finally win in. And he spent a lot of time in his sport running in equipment that he couldn't win in. And so it's one of those things where he's in the process of establishing his identity as a winner. And I think a lot of experienced drivers still look at him like that guy that's running for 20th and expect him to just pull over and get out of the way when they get to him now, or if they get to him. And when he gets to them, I don't think they're showing him the respect that he thinks he deserves. So I don't blame him. You know, you stand up for yourself and you do what you have to do. And this ain't tiddlywinks. We're racing and contact's going to happen and feelings are going to get hurt and people are going to talk about people's mamas. And when it's all said and done, you either stand up for yourself or you get run over. And I think he's tired of being run over. And so he's making sure that everybody knows if you're going to run with the 16 this year, you better bring your A game.
Yeah, we were talking offline, and you know, I think the best way to describe Austin Hill is country strong, because he's a country boy, and he really takes no prisoners. We've seen that the past 3 weeks, 4 weeks, going back to when the Johnny Sauter thing originally started at Texas, and then he dumped him in Iowa, then Sauter dumped him back, got suspended, and then Hill this week. I mean, I don't even know if the broadcast really did I can't speak to that because they might have covered it. I was watching the race quickly after the fact. But, you know, he's rubbing some people the wrong way, but that's not a bad thing. He wants to make a name for himself. He's getting his first Xfinity start this weekend in Daytona. He's a good super speedway driver, as we saw this...
In a truck?
Yeah, this February in Daytona, where he was blocking the hell out of everybody. And honestly, probably should have, could have, or would have been crashed a couple times, but held on to it because there's really no trucks left at the end. There were 6 of them. So, who knows? Who knows? I think Austin needed this, though. It was his first pole, which, speaking of poles, Neff, this is the last topic I want to bring up until we get into our predictions. But what do you think about the cup speed, the cup pole speed being the slowest out of the 3 series this week?
Again, I'm not a fan of low horsepower, high downforce. The theory or the logic behind racing should be the pinnacle of your sport should be the hardest vehicle to drive.
Yep.
And it should separate the men from the boys. And right now you're in a situation where the pinnacle or the peak series has become a cerebral series, and it's the guys that can side draft and the guys that can time runs and you know, manipulate their position at the right moments to get to break the plane, as Joey Logano was saying after the race. He was talking about the fact that he couldn't break the plane on Larson to get by him, and it ultimately burned up his tires and he was done. I know it sounds ludicrous, but I would love to see him give us all the horsepower back and take the rear spoiler off. Completely off the car. And let's see who can drive. Because at that point, you're going to have to use the brakes to turn into corners. And that is ultimately what we need in the Cup Series, is that you have to get on the brakes in order to make the car turn. And when you get to that level, that is what differentiates great drivers from good drivers. The great drivers are able to take it in deeper, get on the brakes harder, and make it turn and enjoy that advantage down the next straightaway. And right now, it's wide open throttle. For all intents and purposes in Chicago, I don't know if they are lifting after 15 laps. I mean, it was that bad. And yeah, as you said, Cup had the slowest pole speed because they got no power.
It's got to be the first time ever that's happened, that they've had the slowest of the top three as far as pole.
I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think, you know, bring all the horsepower you can, and let's see who can drive. Let's see who can go fast. The pinnacle of not just NASCAR, but I would say motorsports, and I might be a little biased in saying that, but I don't think so, because if you, you know, look at the history of NASCAR, it's great, and it's known for being fast with heavy stock cars.
Yep.
And this year, they're down 10, 12 miles per hour on average. I didn't check the pole speed from last year's race, but it was the slowest by over a mile and a half to the Xfinity Series, which Joey Logano ran the fastest lap of the weekend then in Xfinity qualifying. So kudos to him, another Cup driver. but, Neff, I do know, now that we're going to Daytona, this weekend speed will not be an issue. Handling will. So hopefully they have, you know, they're going to have the big old spoilers this weekend. So we saw a good entertaining race, I think we would both agree on, at Talladega. I think it'll be a little bit different this weekend in Daytona. Narrower track. Handling comes more into key, especially in July when it's 95 degrees or however hot it's going to be. Who you got winning? We got doubleheader.
On the Xfinity side, I'm not going to pick a guy that's just running a one-off because that's cheating. How about our guy? Well, technically that's a one-off, but he's in a full-time ride. I'm going to go out on a limb. No, I'm not. I'm going to go on a limb, and the more I think about it, Tyler Reddick's going to win it. He's won a Daytona before. He is a good racer at that track, and I think you're going to see the number two win it. But for my dark horse, I'm taking A.J. Allmendinger in the number 10.
Got it. Now, I'm going to take, you know, before the podcast, I said I was going to take Ross. That would be a one-off, and I'm not going to do that because I think we're going to see a redemption story. I think Justin Haley's going to win. If you recall from last year's race at Daytona, the Xfinity race.
Totally screwed.
Yeah, he I would say he got screwed. You know, he made a pass for the lead. It was Larson and Elliott Sadler running side by side. Haley had this big run coming to the checkered flag. He was already clear, you could argue that, of the front two.
He was clear of the front two before he went below the line.
And then he went below the yellow line. NASCAR deemed that he made the pass below the yellow line, and they took the win away.
Garbage.
So, yeah, I can assure you that he feels the same way, and rightfully so. But I think he's going to get a win here this weekend. And he won one of the stages in the first Daytona race earlier this year. So also a good super speedway driver. And I think we'll see a redemption story. Now, Neff, critical race for the Cup Series. Because as you said, if you win, you're definitely in this year. As long as you're in the top 30 in points. We've seen super speedway races this year be insane. Whether it was the 500 when, you know, Denny Hamlin won. But it was like seven cars finished the race even in the lead draft, because it was such a mess. You had Ryan Newman, who I think finished 13th. He had like two flat tires coming across the finish line just from so much damage. Who you got winning?
I've been saying he was going to shock the world at some point this year, and I'm going to stick with it. I think Matt DiBenedetto finally grabs that checkered flag in the 95. And if you think the Alex Bowman party was big, the Benedetto party will be massive.
Yeah. Out of all the drivers that haven't got a win yet, I mean, they're all going to have a big party if they win, but I feel like the Benedettos would be huge, and I know Corey's would be huge. So.
Oh, my God.
That would be a cool story, though, for him and for Levine Family Racing. They led the most laps in the 500 this year. Matt's a good super speedway driver as well. Just needs a little bit of luck to go his way, which he hasn't found a lot of this year. But Neff, I'm going to go with another first-time winner. And I kind of spoiled it earlier, if you caught on. I'm going William Byron. He's been fast, like we talked about earlier in the podcast, for a while now. Won the pole for the 500 earlier this year. Led 46 laps, which was the second most, to DiBenedetto. So we have good picks here. I think he gets it done. He won the July Daytona race 2 years ago in Xfinity. So, hey, why not again?
And we may see an upset, too, with Bubba Wallace. Because he continues to do well down there, too. And you talk about a story. That would be unbelievable if he managed to pull off a win.
For sure. There's a lot of good stories we could see at Daytona. But Neff, we got an interview with Josh Williams coming up, who finished 8th in the Xfinity race at Talladega. So maybe he'll be a good story. Let's get to my conversation with Josh Williams. All right, Josh, you started 34th and finished 26th last week in Chicago. A bit off from the season average, but I saw you had a loose wheel, which is obviously never good.
Yeah, that hurt us pretty bad there. We had a really good car, really good race car. Mario put a good package together for us, and, we're fast right off the truck, had good speed, and really made gains on it. You know, throughout the whole weekend, we kept getting faster. We had a good solid top 15 car, again, for sure, just had a little bit of bad luck there, loose wheel, and had to come down pit road twice because of it. After that, we just kind of stayed out of trouble and salvaged what we could and ended up 27th. So definitely didn't reflect how good we really were.
Despite going laps down and having the loose wheel, what can you take from Chicago to other tracks? Because obviously, like you said, you guys did have a lot of speed off the truck.
Yeah, we're really working on trying to figure out our bump stop package, what we need to be good at these mile and a half, and especially the rougher mile and a half. It just takes a little bit different package, and we're working on that. There's a million different ways to get to the same end result, and, we're just trying to find the best one and which one works good for us. And we're gaining on it. We're making good progress. We're building some good notes, so I think we're going to get better and better at these mile and a half all the way towards the end of the year.
Yeah, it definitely looks like that because overall the mile and a half program at DGM Racing, at least from an outside perspective, seems to be up from last year. You earned a 14th at Texas, I believe 16th at Vegas, which, it's typically an area where a lot of the smaller teams struggle at, mile and a half tracks. So how would you assess the mile and a half program so far this year?
Like I said, we're definitely making progress. I mean, we're moving forward. We're trying some things, and we missed out on a lot of good runs, just like last week with the loose wheel in California, we blew a motor up, and we were running inside the top 15 in both of those events. So we're making really good gains, and I feel like come Homestead, I think we're going to have a really good package figured out and looking forward to next year, wherever it brings us. So just trying to build the program, build the notes, and just keep getting better. I mean, we only have so much. We only got so many resources, and we only got so much money. We got to make the best out of all of it.
Now, I might be wrong by assuming this, Josh, but I feel like, I know you love short tracks, but I feel like you're the type of guy that also enjoys kind of the worn-out asphalt tracks. Am I right?
Oh, the rougher, the wore-out, the better. That's where it's at, man. Anything that requires ability, I like. And anything that doesn't require ability, your equipment takes over, kind of, I don't know. I don't think we should go to places like that. But we have to, so you just got to be good at all of them.
And you like it just because the driver you feel like makes more of a difference?
Yeah, it definitely makes more of a difference. I mean, if you look at, the finishing results, every week at different tracks compared to a smooth track or to a rough or out track, it's really, people change positions. Even those top guys, the top 10 or whatever, you see different people towards the front than you normally would. So it definitely changes everything.
Got it. Now, Josh, we're 15 races into the Xfinity season. You sit 16th in points. Overall, how would you assess the year so far with DGM?
Man, we've had a really great year. You know, really great year. We've had a little bit of bad luck here and there and, you know, some struggles along the way, but we're definitely improving as a team. Our program is getting better. Mario's doing a fantastic job of getting these race cars together and giving us the best we can have. I'm just super thankful to be a part of it, man. To have somebody like Mario that believes in me for my abilities and you know, says, hey, you know, I'm going to put you in my race car and we're just going to go race and make the best of it. That's cool, man. I mean, as a driver, to have somebody, you know, offer you a ride, it don't happen often, you know what I mean? So I'm super thankful for it, and I'm trying to give it all I can and help with the program any way I can, and Just get after it, man. You just got to get up on the wheel and get all you can get. It's showing. It's definitely showing. So hopefully we can end up the year in the top 15 in points and, you know, have some good solid finishes. And you never know, we're at Daytona this weekend. Something crazy could happen. We could lock ourselves into the chase.
For sure, and I definitely want to talk about that here in a minute. But you brought up the money aspect earlier, and I don't want to talk a lot about that. But you guys are working with a limited budget. So what do you consider a successful day at the track?
Anything above 20th for us, I feel like is really great. You know, we took the green flag at Chicago, and we had two sets of tires in the pit. We had a set of scuffs from practice, and I think we had another set of scuffs from another team that had like four laps, 10 laps, something like that on them. And, you know, that's what we had, and we started the race, and you know, we had good results, and Mario, he came over the radio, he said, man, I'm going to go to Goodyear, and I'm going to get you some tires. I think we could salvage a good finish here, and he comes back on the radio, he says, you won't believe this. He said, Goodyear's out of tires. So Goodyear ran out of left, so we had some right, and we just kept putting old lefts on, and we lost positions on the racetrack, you know, restarts, tires were really big, so it's a struggle, and I mean, well, that's loud, isn't it?
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a struggle, but you can't get upset because you know what you're up against. You know what I mean?
Right.
So you just got to make the best of it. And sometimes it's funny, you know, you're like, really? You already put yourself in the position of, you know, not being able to just go buy 8 sets of brand new tires and then you turn around when you want to go buy new tires, and Goodyear doesn't have any. So that was kind of comical, but it really hurt us bad at the same time.
That is funny. And if you couldn't hear in the background, Josh is coming to us live from Daytona in the garage area. But Josh, the last time I interviewed you was about a month ago at Pocono, and you mentioned, you know, off of what you just said, you feel like the 36 team should finish around the top 15, top 20 every week. Compared to last year, though, how much of that is believing in yourself, or how much this team has truly improved from year to year?
It's both, man. It's just a group. It's a group effort. You know, I mean, I'm not a superstar. You know, I don't get to make a lot of laps and stuff like that. I don't get to go do tire tests. I don't get to get on the Chevy simulator, and I don't get to do any of that. So when I come to the racetrack, I've got to do the best I can, and I'm still learning, you know, myself and how these cars need to feel and what I'm looking for. So it's, you know, I'm improving every weekend, and you know, the guys, everybody on that team's improving every weekend, just cars and setups and things like that, just trying to put it all together to make it one good package, and we're getting it. I mean, we're getting close. Like, I'm sitting here in the garage, and we're on the same side of the garage as the 19, the 39, the 1. I mean, we're the 4 car. I mean, we're right here with Clemens and Brandon Brown. I mean, that's good. I mean, it makes us feel good, and I'm proud of it. You know, I'm proud of everything that we've done as a team, and it just we're not going to stop. We're going to keep getting after it. We're not going to slow down here. We're going to keep moving forward.
For sure. Now, last year, obviously, was the first time you ran the majority of the Xfinity schedule. I think 20 races. But what's the biggest thing you've learned since last year?
I'd probably say that the biggest thing I've learned is, I guess, who I'm racing with. There's a lot of guys that you can race hard with, you know, restart, stuff like that. And then there's some guys you just gotta let go because they're going to come back to you or they're just going to put you in a position that you don't want to be in. So, you know, I think knowing when to be aggressive and when to just, you know, say, hey, this is where I need to be here for the next couple laps, or we're going to finish this stage here. And it's just a strategy, man. That's all it is. Just trying to keep the car in one piece. So I've learned a lot about who I'm racing with. I think that's been my biggest thing this year, is staying out of trouble.
All right, Josh. So we're in Daytona this weekend, the last Super Speedway race of the year for the Xfinity Series. And at the last Super Speedway race, you finished 8th with the 36 car. So what's the goal for this weekend?
Our Super Speedway program is great. I mean, last year here in July, we got in that wreck with under 10 to go there. And we were running in right inside the top 10. I mean, I think we were almost inside the top 5 right there with under 10 to go, and got in that wreck on the front stretch with Cole Custer and them guys. But I mean, it's hard to tell. I mean, you could make it to lap 1, or you could go all the way to the end and win, or you could go all the way to the end and finish 30th. I mean, it's just hard to tell here at these speedways. But I feel like we've got a really good program. We made some changes, and I'm going to give it all I got. All gloves are off. This is the last speedway race. We don't have to run this car for another year, so we got to use up suspenders. We're going to use up suspenders.
That sounds good. Now, obviously, Super Speedway Racing brings the field closer together. Small teams can win, but we still don't see a ton of it. But how much does an 8th-place finish like the one you got at Talladega motivate you, or even seeing guys like Gray Galding, who runs in similar equipment to you on a similar budget, finish 2nd?
Yeah, I mean, Super Speedways are great, you know, for the little guys, because it does give us a shot. And the only thing that I'm going to hate is, say, if we, you know, we win a Super Speedway, or anybody wins a Super Speedway as a small team, they always say, oh, well, you know, it was Daytona. Well, yeah, it was Daytona, but you were on the racetrack with us as well. So, you know, you got to beat everybody. I think it's good. And then, again, I think it's bad, too, because, you know, people say, oh, well, Daytona, that's why you won. Well, no, that's not why we won. We won because we were smart. We had a good enough car to be in that position, and just outdrove them. So, I don't know. I guess it's got its ups and downs. But I don't care what they say if we win.
Of course. Now, but overall, you enjoy racing at Super Speedway races?
I do. I love speedway racing. It's just a big strategy, man. It's a big chess game. And when I first started speedway racing in the ARCA series, I had TJ Majors as a spotter. He really coached me a lot, and he taught me a ton about air and, you know, how it works and what I need to do. And it made a big difference in my Super Speedway career. We've had some really good finishes in the ARCA series. Technically, we won Talladega in 2016, but we're not going to talk about that. But it's a big, big chess game, man. It's just a lot faster. You just got to be on top of it, and you almost got to know what's going to happen, you know, while they're starting to make their moves, so you put yourself in a good position. So I do thank TJ Majors a ton for what he did for me in my speedway career at the beginning.
Yeah, obviously a good spotter to have, who's, you know, spotted Dale Jr. to a Daytona 500 victory. Now, Josh, I have a few more for you. The Talladega race was wild, and I think we would both agree that the first Daytona race sucked. So what kind of race do you think we'll see this weekend? Because obviously handling's going to come into play, given that it's Daytona and it's July.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be super hot. You know, I think since we're to this point and we're pretty much halfway through the season, mm-hmm. and this is the last speedway race, I hope that the race is a little bit wild. You know, I hope that everybody tries to give it all they have. If they start running the top like they did in February, I'll probably be the only car on the bottom, because that's just ridiculous. I told Wayne, I said, you need to start black flagging people for running a top like that. I mean, it's just, it hurts everybody. You know what I mean? Even the guy running fourth, he's not going to pass anybody. You know what I mean? And then nobody wants to go with you. So that's the biggest struggle, is convincing somebody, hey, let's go to the bottom and let's pass these guys because they're scared. So I'm not scared. I'll try to do it by myself as long as I can. So I hope it's wild. Wild is better. Driving around on the top is just boring. Makes for a long day.
Agreed. And I kind of want to follow up with that. When a race does get filed, a single file like it did in February, we talked off record about this in Pocono and other times this year, but how frustrating is that? And you can be as blunt as you want.
Oh, it's just so aggravating. Like, I probably held the radio button down for 2 laps, and I was giving them hell. And we had Jeffrey Earnhardt with us, and we had Timmy Hill. And Timmy Hill was like, all right, let's go. But Jeffrey Earnhardt says, no, we're just going to ride right here. Why would you ride in the back like that? I don't understand. And me and Timmy went down there, and we passed 5, 6, maybe even 8 cars. But nobody else would go with us. So, like, we got to the front of our pack, but we couldn't catch the next one because nobody would go with us. And it's just, God, I was so mad. you can't make progress on your own. You know, you're one car fighting 37 others, you know. And so you need somebody to go with you.
All right, Josh, I'll get you out of here on this one. You know, you said how DGM's improved a lot from last year, even weekly this year. But what are some of your goals moving forward the rest of the year?
Win on Friday. finish top 15 in drivers and owners points. And, you know, just finish every race from here on out on the lead lap. Make every lap if we can. And just keep progressing. As long as we keep progressing and we don't go backwards or we don't stay where we're at, I think that's going to be a successful year for us, either way you look at it.
Well, cool, Josh. Definitely appreciate your time live from the garage at Daytona. But to the listeners, like, Josh is one of these guys who does it the old school way. He was pushing his car through tech today, works on the cars, set up the scales, does a lot of cool stuff outside of just driving the car. So make sure to follow him. I wrote about it last month at frontstretch.com. So make sure to look at that to find more out about Josh. Josh, thanks for your time.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me on. And anytime, you know me, I'm controversial. So anything cool you got to talk about, I'm sure I got something to say.
All right, y'all. That wraps up this week's show. That was a fun conversation with Josh. He came on the podcast last year to discuss his season with DGM, which he ran 20 races, like I alluded to in the interview with him, his side business with his wife, but also crew chiefing at DGM, because he served as the crew chief when Andy Lally ran on the road courses last year. Like I, you know, said after the end of the interview, Josh does a lot outside of the car that a lot of people don't see. Last year, going up to Michigan, which was the first time I ever really interacted with Josh, I actually drove the hauler, the team rig, to Michigan. But he has since then told me that that's the only time that he's ever driven the rig. Can't blame him. I think he's a legitimate shot, though, to get a top 5 this weekend, and who knows, maybe even a win. And then, as always, great conversation with Neff talking racing, which is something that both of us obviously love. Hopefully we'll have as much to talk about after this weekend's race at Daytona as we did after this past weekend at Chicago. But until then, we out.